You're listening to Coleman Power on the Organic Fitness Podcast.
All right, welcome to the latest episode of the Coleman Power Organic Fitness Podcast. I have most certainly Niamh Fanley, most certainly all the way from County Mayo, who is most certainly a DIY enthusiast, showing people how to get started from most certainly growing nothing to growing something in 2024. Niamh, say hello to the listeners.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're all well.
I suppose I brought Niamh on to, I suppose, tell not only her story, but also the likes of her skill set of where she most certainly has come from, a farming background, someone who also has a master's degree in most certainly her area of expertise. But Niamh, yeah, tell us where, I suppose, it all started and we can kind of get going from there.
Well, I did study horticulture, and I don't know, was it by accident or what, but I had a big interest in animals when I was younger, and I always wanted to be a vet. Now, I knew I would never, ever get the points for being a vet, because I was, we'll say, below average in school, I'd say. I didn't really like school, but I thought I might get veterinary nursing, and that was on my CAO for the first position and the second position, and I didn't get either of them. And horticulture happened to be my third position. And I was like, sure, we'll give it a go. It's outside. I knew from a young age that outdoors was the place to be. I did think that would be with animals, but it ended up being horticulture. And yeah, it's definitely one of the best things that's happened all right in my life. It's funny when you look back on things and you really try to figure out why it's not going the way you want it to go, and it ends up being the best thing that can happen to you. So that was a happy accident, maybe. But so yeah, I graduated in 2018 with a horticulture degree. Then I did my master's, and that was focused on food production in Ireland and the Netherlands, and comparing the two, because Netherlands is a big producer of horticulture produce, and Ireland, some people really want to be good at that, but what's impeding the Ireland from producing a lot of their own food? Like, we can produce a lot of potatoes, onions, all those sort of crops, but it doesn't seem to be happening. And that's purely down to supermarkets, cheap food coming in from other countries, and they just can't compete. So yeah, that was a big eye opener, a big learning curve as well of how food is produced, and it really opened my eyes to where our food comes from and what we're eating.
Yeah, and that's such a great point, Niamh. Before we even pressed record there, we were just chatting about the likes of where food does come from, and even people being aware of that. Like, on every food item that has a packaging, whether we touched on either blueberries or carrots or potatoes, you can look at the origin of where it comes from. So take, for example, there's a high percentage of even the potatoes that grow extremely well and so easily in Ireland. You put a potato in the ground, pretty much do very little to it, and you get 10 more. That's the basic simple principles of a potato. There ain't too much more to it. But they come from Central Europe, such as Cyprus. If you're getting them for the 49-cent discount stores, which we will not mention on this podcast, the idea is we can literally grow a small bit of our own to produce the best type of foods possibly known to man, woman, and child. And the taste is the difference. Am I right in saying that, Niamh?
Oh, 100%. Like, and I get it all the time. So, like, I obviously grow my own stuff, but you give a few bits here and there, stuff you would have spared to neighbors or friends and all that, and they're like, they come back and like, Jesus, like, particularly carrots, that's always a big one in flavor and taste, potatoes, everything, tomatoes, all that. But yeah, it did open my eyes to God, like, where is our food actually coming from and what's in it? So after my master's, I did a bit of traveling and stuff, and I came back. And I knew food production after that was always where I wanted to go. And so I came back and I ended up working down in Cork with Brian McCarthy on Cork Rooftop Farm. That was a great learning experience.
And that's actually where we first met, and right in saying that, as I delivered
Yes.
Tarouzum artichokes and Yak On, which are two massive superfoods. And Niamh suddenly said, we're after a meeting before. And I said, I know exactly what I had in my hand, probably about four crates too many, stacked from waist height above my head height, according to the shop.
You coming in all right with crates, and I was like, where is this lad going with this? I was like, who the fuck is this? But oh, Coleman, like, he's everyone that's watching this or obviously knows you already, but you're just so full of energy. Your presence is very uplifting, and you're a great ambassador for the food industry as well. But yeah, I just remember, I always remember the first time I meet you, I'm like, where is this lad going? And then, so Cork Rooftop Farm, I was there for about 8 9 months. I had a really great learning experience down there with Brian. Do you know what he's doing at the minute and where he's going with his food journey and food production is amazing. So they've got a new parcel of land outside Cork, and what they're going to do with that and the future project of that is amazing. The access to food for such a big population and all that, and the opportunity for new growers to come in and work on a bit of land and grow their own food. It sounds unreal. But yeah, I had a great time down there. Great inspiration. Then a job opportunity came up closer to home here in Mayo, and I'm working in a kitchen garden in Ashford Castle. So that project began in 2022. So I'm working with the head gardener there, and we're growing as much food as we can in a small space. And it's really nice. It's really progressive. We have a lot of new projects coming up, and it's lovely. We do tours as well. It's really nice to show guests where their food comes from, and they're just blown away about certain foods and how they grow. And it's very educational as well.
Yeah. Is there something that you, I suppose, in your own journey right now from growing and went, oh my God, that I didn't know that it grew like that it must have even tasted that particular way? Is there anything that kind of stands out in your mind?
Everything really, it's been so intensive since I came back and started working here in Ireland in horticulture till now. It's been so intensive. The stuff I'm learning, I'm still really at the early stages of growing food. And anything that stands out, I say everything, and I actually do mean it, because you realize, you're like, Jesus, and I would have grown stuff when I was younger and all that. But yeah, everything's like, God, you learn so much, and all you have to do is go out and do it yourself.
Your
And
hands in the soil and start, I suppose, seeing
yeah.
it go from one stage to the other. And one that stands in my mind when I first started growing, and just reminded me of that exact image when I saw you putting in the asparagus crowns there on the likes of
Yeah.
Instagram. So for people, asparagus, they barely know what it looks like. I'm going to say some people wouldn't don't, and even I'll shame my own brother, mightn't know what asparagus actually looks like. It's the tall pencil or pen like. I'm going to say vegetable that has most certainly spears on the top of it. And when it's at a later stage, it more so looks like the fox's tail, which again, very few people, when I would do a course or an event, would say, Coleman, I have no clue what that is. Is it fennel? Is it? They haven't a notion. And it's because at different stages of plant, most certainly as we do, we look completely different from when we did when we were a baby, all the way to when we're going to be 60, 70, and 80, and 100, when I'm definitely going to live till at least.
Asparagus actually was a big one for me. I was like, Jesus. And it's lovely showing it to people as well, because they're just like amazed by it, and it is amazing the way it grows. Actually, another one I thought of when they're talking there is the amount of flowers you can eat. I know that's not a bulk part of your diet or anything, but it's amazing the amount of flowers you can eat. Majority of them are edible. And a lot of them would add so much to a salad. If you add a load of borage, white and purple, even the chai flowers, they have so much flavor in them. So yeah, that really just amazing to me anyways. And Yeah, it's like you never stop learning. It's like with the bees. I have bees as well, and they'll always tell you when you get into beekeeping, like even if you're at it 50 years, you're still learning something. And I feel gardening is like that as well. You'll always be presented with challenges that you didn't, you thought you figured it out, but something else comes along and really messes with you. And it's great like that. I like that. I love a good challenge, and trying to figure out how to do it, and you really have to think outside the box sometimes with different things.
Yeah, and I know, Niamh, you brought up the likes of flowers in particular. And just to even go back to that point and expand on it further, the point is, right, we'll go and touch on the likes of flowers and things that both, and for most people, they mightn't even know what both is. It's going from, I suppose, the immature stage, the leaf, let's say it's a rocket leaf salad or a mignon or tatsoi, any of those oriental salads that tolerate the likes of the winter conditions which we had. And after that, they go into the bolt, they flower, all those leaves are edible. Those then are one thing that people don't often consume. When you consume things that you don't often get into your diet, it improves the likes of your gut health. So we have the likes of every plant has to flower, because inside in the flower we have the fruits, and after the fruits we have the likes of the seeds, and that's the full cycle that so many people miss out on. So I would always mention even to people that if something goes, oh, mine always bolt, and I go, that's great, now you get to save the seeds off it. So that idea of, I suppose, you sow a seed yourself. You harvest the leaves of whatever it is you're consuming, whether it's kale, another one of the brassicas, a rocket, mignon, or ones that ring out in my mind for the cold conditions. After that, then we save the little pods that are all quite easy to save for beginners, similar like a tiny pea. Open it up, pop those little black seeds into like a brown paper bag for the likes of the duration of the winter, and you're ready to go again for whenever you would like to grow. Some people grow that rocket in the summer months, but I'd nearly prefer to grow with the seasons, because they are part of the brassica family that do like the cooler conditions. So I typically sow my kind of rocket and kale typically in the, I'm going to say, cooler conditions, maybe August and September, and I start sowing them again.
Well, it makes way for different summer crops in as well. But when you're on about different vegetables going to seed there as well, it's another side of gardening that people really don't know about. Because an example would be I let two of my cabbage plants go to seed there 2 years ago, was it? And everyone thought like, oh, it's really messy looking, like, they see when something goes to seed, like, oh, that's obviously not, why haven't you taken that away? And I wouldn't mind, but the brassica flowers are so nice as well. And the amount of bees it does attract is unreal. Like, I had this massive head of flowers, like, just in season for so long, and the amount of bees it attracts. And I knew I was going to see saving it for a seed anyways, but I must give you some. I have. I'd say I have a half kilo bag of cabbage seed now in the drawer, but it's definitely another side of gardening that people wouldn't see. They think, oh, it's just a messy garden. But saving seed is quite important too, if you can. You'll find a small bit of space somewhere to save seed. And that's really important too as well for your own garden. You can build up that genetic tolerance to your own growing conditions and all that, and food security and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's different aspects to gardening where people, would be like, oh, they just wouldn't know about it.
Yeah, and you're so
But
right,
maybe that's
Niamh.
something.
And you're so right in saying that, right? Sustainability is something that is so important. And people that do save their own seeds, like tomato, is another real easy one. But we'll name out the top five easiest of the seeds to save. Definitely the tomato. You're literally taking off the flesh, which I wouldn't even throw away. I'd eat it. I would literally spread that out on a bit of cardboard, leave it dry out in your polytunnel glass house or your windowsill. Your potatoes. Potato seeds are just the smaller ones that you can literally save that we typically don't eat. And then steep them, or leave them, sorry, in your shed or your, I'm going to say, dark press for the likes of when they're sowing them again. The likes of your March, month of March. After that, then we go with another real easy one, is the likes of any of your brassicas. So that's your kale, that's your rockets, two another real, real easy one, and cabbage that you already have there as well. Any other two final ones that you might save your seeds from yourself?
Any legumes, they're
Thank you.
really easy. Yeah, legumes really. Just at the end of the season, you leave enough on for as much seed as you want. Let it dry out in the plant. That's what I do. I don't pick them. I let them dry out in the plant, and they do just fine. Pick them, and yeah, really, it's easy as tomatoes. Another one would be, trying to think of another. All the fruity ones are quite easy. Like, as long as they're not F1s, you know, cucumbers, all them summer crops. Squash. Squash is another really
Squash,
good
yeah,
one.
another real
Yeah.
easy one. Yeah, and
Yeah.
there's a variety of squash that I absolutely love. I don't know if you've grown it yet. Crown Prince, get your hands on it.
Yeah, that's unreal. It
If you
stores
haven't,
so well.
it stores so well. It's the
Yeah.
sweetest. My God, the sales of Crown Prince, I'm leaning my head into the mic, have gone
Yeah.
through the roof, right? It is a beautiful blue, I'm going to say, coated squash, but bright orange in the middle. Like this, like I've actually brought that to different retreats and events that I do and given it to people. And they're like, oh my God, Gorman, is this like, and I kind of sliced it in such a way and like, what kind of cake is this? And I said, that is just a squash. I'm the laziest, healthiest fella ever. I grabbed the squash from the shed, which was already just right beside the likes of the veg patch. I bring it into the oven, right beside the roast chicken. I pop it into the oven. An hour and a half, 2 hours later, I take it back out with gloves, put it down, slice it like a birthday cake, and eat it. Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
All you need, yeah, it's fantastic. And there's such a wide variety of squash plants that we can grow here as well that a lot of people wouldn't know about. You know, I suppose when you think of pumpkins and all that, everyone just thinks of your caravan ones, but the variety you can grow here is unreal, and they're so easy to grow. And you'll have them, depends how much you grow, but you can store them up until February, March the following year. Like, you know,
Easily.
it's fantastic. And that's something actually that I really kind of, and it comes with time. It does. You know, once you go from no gardening to growing your own stuff, it's a progression. So you start growing your own stuff, figuring stuff out. Then you're trying to deal with gluts, and that comes with time. But you slowly, well, this is what I found anyways, you slowly start preserving maybe one crop, and then the following year, you know, it's going so well, then you start preserving other crops. And then that's how you get into it. You know, a lot of people get overwhelmed as well and almost give up, but it's the progressional thing. Like, you just have to take it bit by bit and slowly, and then you know how to use stuff better. You know how to preserve things in a certain way. And I found that with my journey as well. That's, you know, that came with time as well. And figuring out how to do that and how to use food. You know, people be like stuff will say, any sort of stuff like pak choi. They're like, oh, you know, because they've probably never cooked with it before. But you know, you start to learn how to use it in different dishes, and you know, and it varies your diet then, and then you become very seasonal. So like, one thing that I would really miss is basil and pesto, really fresh pesto. So I always really look forward to that when I start coming in about June or so. And you know, and that's really good because you're working with the seasons then, and you're w more aware of that. And it's nice because you look forward to stuff like that, all them summer crops coming. And then you do have some preserves going through the winter, but then you move on to a different diet with your winter autumn crops, and then you're back around again. So it's a really nice process once you start following your own crop and plan and all that. It's nice.
Yeah, too right. I suppose, Niamh, you'd be someone that's majorly into, I suppose, sustainability and different, I suppose, approaches to it, not only fruits and vegetables, but you're in the process of, well, firstly, you have, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, your own hens at the minute.
Yeah, we've always had hens growing up. At the minute, yeah, we just have four. It's enough to keep us going, you know. Everyone takes a few from the family and all that. They're lovely to have around. So you let them off down the field to do their own thing, to be in around sheep and all that, and you bring them back in. But yeah, it's always something we had. And yeah, there's nothing better than your fresh eggs. Luckily, they do slow down coming into the winter, but this winter we've had eggs right through the winter, so it's great. I know some people their hens just stop altogether, but no, it's something people can get as well. Even if you have a small little holding or you know, a small backyard, you can work it in such a way that you can have at least two hens. And it's an invaluable source of food to have as well. Yeah,
without a
definitely.
shadow of a doubt. Complete protein, essential healthy fats. It contains vitamin A, D, E, and K. It's actually better than a tablet. And literally, it's outside your back door when you have your own hens, which is amazing. The taste, again, taste of the yolk. Nothing like you've ever tasted before. But not only that, you're in the planning of getting two.
Pigs.
Two pigs. I want to name them. If anyone here would like to send in names to Neve's pigs if she hasn't got just
no.
yet.
Oh, I don't think I can name them because I get awful attached to animals, and I've been warned by my parents, particularly my father, is like, why are you getting pigs? He's like, you know, like you're not going to be able to kill them. And I was like, no, I will. I was like, I promise. They're not getting named. They're purely for meat, and that's it. So no, definitely no names.
No names. Scratch
names.
That. Neve does not want names. Retract any of the names. Immediately, if you've sent them in already, I will keep them to myself for someone else, and maybe my own, in the future.
So it's a new venture. Look, pigs for me has been on the cards for a very, very long time. So coming into the winter there, I was like, right, I need to get my act together now. With a lot of planning, they have been, I've moved where they're going a lot of times, but we've definitely found the perfect spot. Dad is great as well. He's, you know, I'd be lost without him. Anth and I come up with, I want suggestions or ideas, he's straight on foot. So he found a perfect spot for them. There's an old shed down beside a bit of forestry we have. It's on the edge of it. So that's their housing. That's already sorted. And then we're making a fairly big cornered off area of that forestry area. And they can go in there, graze, they have shelter. And yeah, they'll clear a bit of the land as well. There's a lot of briars and stuff, a bit of overgrown stuff. So with time, they'll gradually naturally clear that land, regenerate it as well with all their fertilizer. And we'll keep moving them on and we'll see how we go from there. But I would have taken a lot of inspiration from Brendan in 4B Affirm.
I was just going to mention it. I swear to God. I literally, as I was sitting here going, 4BF Farm, Brendan. Yeah, I'll be very friendly with him. Lovely fella. Yeah. And again, just like I always recommend to people to send me a message privately to touch base. Like send Brendan, most of yourself, Neve, any questions they have on growing your own. Because people who put out things and have social media pages, that's what they want to do. Because they're already doing it for free anyway. So if someone says, oh, I'm not sure, how did you do and plant those squash? Was there any tips? Or what variety? I can't remember, Neve. Is there anything else? Remember you told me to leave the peas on or was it take them off? I can't remember. Like, you ask the question to the right person, you get the right answer.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anyone that's doing this on social media, doing their passion, they're more than happy. They love to see messages coming in of how do I do this or, you know, sending pictures. I've been getting a lot lately on setting up a grown area. It's just I'm getting a lot of beginner messages of how, you know, how do I start? Like just a simple question. And it's great. Like you can give them a good few options depending.
And how Neve would you recommend, right? So to start people off, right? I'm gonna just throw the word in there that's been used. No dig. So we have a grassy area that we are cutting every single year. I'm sick to the death of going out, pushing that mower around the place. How do I and what do I do is day one.
Okay, so it's important if you've never grown before to start off small. Because if you decide very enthusiastically someday, Jesus, I'm going to do 20 meters squared. Like, I would not recommend that. And I've heard that a lot from people coming to me saying, oh, geez, there a few years ago, we built 8 raised beds and now it's just all weeds. And it's disheartening as well. It's like, you know, if they started off with the one and managed that and figured out, because if you go from not growing to trying to manage 8 raised beds, like I don't think I would manage 8 raised beds. Do you know, you just have to take it bit by bit. So what I would recommend is, definitely go for no dig. Mow down a patch, a small patch where you can fit maybe 2 beds. Now, the width of the bed is up to you. So what you're comfortable working with. What I would recommend is put down like bamboo sticks for the corners and maybe a bit of string around so you can visualize that bed. So you can go as wide as you want or narrow. So I do like the narrower beds because I can stand over them and work over them that way. I find it better for my legs and my back. You might want to go wider so you can go up to maybe 1.5 meters, maybe a bit more, and you can work from either side. But it's purely up to you. So get a feel for that first before you start doing anything. And then you can go as long as you want. Once you have that figured out, you just mow your area down really well. Skin it as much as you can. Get your care board, wet it, and then start adding your compost to those bed widths that you want. Then for paths, like you can leave the care board. That will disintegrate over time and the weeds will start coming up. So I do recommend if you can get any organic material you can into those paths. So you could have, like, if you know a tree surgeon, they always have this big stockpile of chipped trees in their yard. So I'd recommend getting in contact. They'll know someone that knows someone as well with that sort of stuff. And even stuff from around your own yard. And just fill in those paths, and you might have to top them up once or twice a year. But I would recommend investing in a nice compost so you can get a bit of mix going on there. You can get mushroom compost, you can get a compost topsoil mix, and it's worth investing in that to get a good foundation for your growing area as well. And you just start planting straight away. And yeah.
And it's as easy as that. So that's that no dig that you might see, and people often say, "I'm going to something. I've heard something about no dig, but I don't know what it is." That's simply what it is: mowing down your grass, putting down cardboard, wetting it, putting in some sort of growing medium for yourself to plant in. The main thing, as Niamh said, determine what size width beds that you want. I like them. I wouldn't say too wide. I like them 1 point, so it's a meter 0.3, just so I can have full capability of kneeling down on one side, reaching over to the other, going around to the other side, or jumping over and being able to reach halfway. That is a key thing. I do not like beds that are any more than 2 meters, because otherwise you're tiptoeing. No matter how flexible yoga grounding stretching routine that you get, you'll be stepping in on the beds. That wrecks my head. Don't be walking on your beds. No more jumping on the beds, as the monkey says, or as my niece says. So that is literally key for what you want to do. Lay it out. Draw it on a piece of paper, clearly as day, and not to take on too much at any one time. Do not, most certainly, as Niamh says, take on a 20 meter by 20 square footed area. So that literally there's nothing that you can literally control, and the weeds that come up at the end of the day, slow and steady, you build on that, and the knowledge go, "Oh yeah, I now know how to keep the weeds down or control," and even having a weed-free bed. This is one that I would recommend, the Tree Sisters, if anyone hasn't heard of it. It's literally one raised bed or bed on the flat with, I'm gonna say, two sweet corn plants in the middle. That's going to literally be the anchor to the beams that literally wind up around that sweet corn, and the likes of one, two, three different squash, whether it be crown prince, butternut squash, or any of the gourds that you can also, or pumpkins that you could have as well as a weed suppressant covering the ground. So there's no weeding going on there. The sweet corn goes up here, another sweet corn over in this area for those people watching on YouTube. In on top of that, what goes around the likes of those is the climbing French beans or runner beans that you then harvest intermittently. Because that's what it's a technique that was done years ago by the Indians. They won, and literally they came, they harvested some of the likes of the sweet corn. Then they went away, then they came back, then they took some of the beans with them and went away and came back. Tail end of the year, the squash almost certainly are still there. Harvest the squash, cook it in a pot, make whatever they want out of those ingredients.
It's fantastic. And just, grow what you want as well. Like, don't be going fancy and all that. And gradually over time, then you'll want to try new things and you'll become a more adaptable as well. But even starting growing off a bit of lettuce, like you can even start off container growing if you want to. So lettuce works fine in containers, herbs. And once you start off with that and be able to manage that, and you'll want to do more because you'll realize, geez, that's great. Like, you can grow a bit of that. Why can I not try this? And it's a journey. Like, don't start off big and try to rush it, because I can guarantee you it won't work out for you. You get overwhelmed and you'll give up. And that's not what like, no, yeah, you have to start small and you'll see the progress, and it's about gaining momentum as well, and then you'll be flying.
I suppose, Niamh, you're a massive advocate for people looking to, I suppose, change the way they currently look at foods, and or people who want to start off their own, I'm going to say, growing journey in itself. And I suppose appreciate your time even giving it to me today to record this podcast. Is there anywhere, most certainly, if you would like people to check you out, whether it be social media or anything else for that matter? What is the handles? And I'll po post that up.
Well, Instagram is my biggest one, and that's just Niamh underscore Flanley. And then I am on Facebook as well, and that's just Niamh Flanley as well. I'm not on TikTok, I'm not on YouTube.
Yeah.
two platforms is enough for me at the minute, anyways. Would I ever go on YouTube? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I would like to. Look, we'll see how the next 6 months, year ago, and if there's enough interest, I might start. But for now, it's just those two platforms. I just try to put up as much informative information as I can. They're usually short reels. People seem to like that, and I'll definitely keep doing that. I have a bit on the farm as well. I don't have much on the farm. I just don't get time to do it. I will hopefully have a lot when I get these pigs. But it's mostly garden content.
Perfect job, Niamh. And I know you have an event on the likes of February the 17th, but you've actually even informed me that that's completely sold out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Geez, awfully surprised. It's my first workshop on growing. It's hosted by Fiona Egan, her cookery school in Longford. And yeah, I don't know. There must be a big push for wanting to grow your own food. I'm absolutely delighted, really looking forward to it now. Encouraging, inspiring others to grow their own. And it'll just be a simple, set up garden layout, how to start growing on a small scale. Seedlings, crop plan, and all that. And yeah, not really looking forward to that now.
Yeah, right. Niamh, thanks so much. And I'm going to tell the listeners to most certainly stay tuned for any other different events on most certainly Niamh's pages, whether it be on Facebook and advertised also on Instagram. But Niamh, I always end these podcasts by saying stay tuned, stay classy, and keep it organic. So, with this week's podcast and a major emphasis on people growing their own, and with Niamh's courses most certainly booked out as well, we have in County Galway, okay? At Kylemore Farm, touching on a DIY and grow your own day with the DIY Academy, Martin Glynn. All right, what a legend of a man. We have shown you guys, us teaming up on social media, but here is the event on the 18th of February, right? That is not a million miles away past Valentine's, and most certainly could be a brilliant present and or gift to yourself or a loved one, or come as a couple. All right. After that, we have in County Cork in Middleton on the 20, most certainly 4th, we have a grow your own and nutrition day with myself and Cara O'Donnell. Right? You're interested in any of those? Book in far. I'm going to say before even tickets sell out. Or that, DM to get those links and details. And that, hope you enjoyed this week's show.
You're listening to Coleman Power on the Organic Fitness Podcast.